Today, how Philip Green built the business empire that he might now be on the verge of losing. And on Monday, the President of the United States called the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, a stone-cold loser. Khan gives us his response. It has been a tumultuous few weeks for Sir Philip Green. Last week, he was charged in the US with 4 counts of misdemeanor assault following allegations from a fitness instructor in Arizona who said Green had repeatedly touched her inappropriately, which he strenuously denies. And his retail empire, the Arcadia Group, could face administration unless today creditors can agree on Green's restructure plan.
We're talking Topshop, Top Man, Wallace, Miss Selfridge, Dorothy Perkins.
Last week, it was announced that the flagship Miss Selfridge store on Oxford Street would close, on top of 23 more Arcadia stores around the country, putting 18,000 people's livelihoods at risk.
If the business collapses, they haven't got a job, and there's a huge hole in Arcadia's pension fund. So, with no clear answers from Arcadia, and with Sir Philip not being in the country, we decided to go and find him.
Rupert Neat is The Guardian's wealth correspondent. He recently approached Green about the potential collapse of his company.
So we flew out to Monaco. It was pretty easy to find Lionheart, Sir Philip Green's yacht, because it's the biggest in the port that day. There was no sign of Sir Philip. We went to his favourite restaurant. We went to a couple of bars that he's been packed at. We didn't have any luck. So we sat down in this cafe on the seafront. And I was like, oh, excuse me, to the couple next to us. You haven't seen Philip Green, have you? And they said, yes, he was having lunch here just 20 minutes ago. And then just as we're about to give up, James, the video producer, says, watch out, he's behind you. And I turn around and there he is in his sort of trademark ASICS grey tracksuit.
Excuse me, Sir Philip.
Yeah.
My name's Rupert Neame, reporter from The Guardian.
Hello.
Have you got a second?
Put that down.
Can I...
Hold on, stop that. Why are you wasting your time?
Well, you know why people are interested in this.
I don't want to talk to you.
Why not?
Because I don't want to.
Into the more than 1 billion in dividends you've taken out over the last few years.
Why are you wasting your time?
From The Guardian, I'm Indy Raxon. Today in Focus, with further allegations against him and his company facing insolvency, what's the future for Philip Green?
Being a business correspondent, especially in retail, it is sometimes a bit like doing sort of hello for business, because you have these kind of characters. You have some very interesting characters that you follow through their career. And Philip Green is probably one of the most colourful characters in the industry.
Sarah Butler is a Guardian journalist, writing about retail companies, consumer goods and workers' rights. She's been charting Philip Green's career for over 20 years.
I would ring him up for a quote about something and he would say, oh, I'm not talking to you, I don't need to talk to you. And he'd start shouting and then you'd sort of write that down as your quote and put it into the story.
I like that you're holding your imaginary phone about a foot away from your head.
Yeah, so probably like the first five or six years, I didn't really get the phone near the ear too often. Back then, and for years, he was always on the phone. He's got this old style Nokia phone. Every journalist knew him. He would know us by name. He knew everyone in the city, knew everyone in the industry. He didn't really have PRs who handled his relationship with the media. He spoke to journalists.
So Philip Green is the name we now associate with the Arcadia Group. But in fact, this is a business that has its roots in retail before Philip Green was even born, as the Burton Group.
A complete new outfit, the coupon clipper's dream.
Montagu Burton came to Britain in 1900 to escape the Russian pogroms, and he started a new menswear brand. By 1929, he'd listed it on the London Stock Exchange, and it grew hugely after the Second World War, when it provided demobilisation suits for returning soldiers.
There's everything here from pinstripe suits for budding businessmen to light checks for country gents.
The mass market started to take off. Independent tailors were being replaced. Everyone could afford something that had been made in a factory. And so in Sheffield in the 60s, his son, Raymond Burton, set up Topshop.
Bundy shorts in satin that she doesn't look too fat in. Topshop! What you doing to me?
So the early incarnation of the Burton Group is up and running through the 70s and the 80s, and it sets up more and more high street brands, that many of which we know today, and then it's renamed the Arcadia Group in the early 90s. So during all this, what is Philip Green doing?
Well, his dad, I think, ran an electricals business, and his mum apparently set up the first coin-operated laundrette. And
so entrepreneurs?
Yeah, entrepreneurs, but sort of quite well off. He went to private school, and, you know, he's not a rags-to-riches story. His dad died when he was 12, and by the time he was 21, he'd left school with no O-levels, but he was running a property business with his mum, and together they set up a number of different businesses, most of which didn't do very well, including the Joan Collins Jeans Company, which got a lot of publicity, but I think lasted about a year. Yeah, linked to Joan Collins. But he's gradually sort of building his contacts and his knowledge and his financial resources, and he's becoming an expert in doing deals. So 1988, this is when he really becomes known, and he bought into a company called Amber Day, which was a menswear business. It wasn't doing very well. He kind of restructured it and expanded it, and he partly did that by getting his name known in the city. It's this sort of idea of calling up people, talking up his business, talking up himself, telling the kind of myth of who he was. And so Amber Day was quite a small company, but it got a lot of column inches. But by 1992, he didn't deliver the profits that he'd promised. Mm. And the shares in the company dived, and he was ousted. And really, his name was sort of mud.
Oh, really? In 92?
Yes. This is his first sort of fall from grace, if you like.
And despite headlines in the 90s forecasting his demise, he and his businesses do actually continue to have quite a lot of success.
He still had the family property empire. He was still buying and selling businesses. Even at that time, he was known for his sort of lavish lifestyle, hosting fancy dinner parties and owning this amazing house in St. John's Wood and apparently a peacock green Bentley.
And then in 2002, after continuing to buy and sell companies for a decade after that crash, Philip Green gets a very appealing opportunity to buy Arcadia.
Well, at that time, he was riding on a high. He was known as the king of the high street. And so he gets involved in a deal to buy Arcadia.
And what did he do with Arcadia after he acquired it?
He tried to source things more cheaply, cut costs and restructure. In terms of building the brands, Topshop at that time was almost like its own fiefdom. Mm. It was run by this lady, Jane Shepherdson. It was the cash cow for the business, and he was sensible enough to let her get on and run it. But after a number of years of kind of leaving her to her own devices largely, he started to meddle.
Why was he meddling?
He is someone who is so overly self-confident, he thinks he knows it and he won't be told by anyone else. Right. He wanted to control every aspect. So in 2006, a deal was signed for Kate Moss, you know, who was then even more famous than she is now, to do her own label for Topshop.
That tells its own story. That's Kate to a T, isn't it? That's sort of her style.
Oh, I like this one. This you could wear really just for a lunch, and this one's quite a number.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
But before Kate Moss's range had even launched, Jane Shepherdson, the boss of Topshop, had resigned. I'm not sure it was just that deal, but I think that deal was a sign of this increasing meddling in the Topshop world, and she had enough and just left.
So he's meddling in things at Topshop, but also in the whole business at the Arcadia Group. What happens?
His wife has moved to Monaco and the businesses are transferred into her name.
And Monaco is a tax haven.
And in 2005, the Greens paid themselves a £1.2 billion dividend from Arcadia, which is still the biggest corporate payout in British history.
Yeah.
So this means that they didn't pay any tax on this massive dividend. Someone who was working for Arcadia told me is that just before the Greens paid themselves this £1.2 billion dividend in 2005, they flew a bunch of the senior staff out to Monaco to celebrate the company's results. They didn't tell them about this dividend. So they take this bunch of staff to their apartment and they show them around Tina Green's walk-in wardrobe and her shoe collection. And then they take them to the yacht and let them watch a video of one of Philip's parties. They put them on the plane home, and the next morning all these staff wake up and they see that this £1.2 billion dividend has been paid out of the company rather than, you know, being invested in stores or exciting product or wages or whatever it might be. They all felt pretty gutted.
So through these years, sort of around 2007, 2008, I mean, he already is a pretty well-known public persona, but he really is becoming quite famous now.
He's gone from being just a business personality to being a kind of celebrity personality. He knows Simon Cowell, who was involved with The X Factor. He's holidaying in Barbados with Michael Winner. On his 50th birthday, he flew hundreds of people to Cyprus for a toga party where Rod Stewart was the entertainment. His ability to make money has been noticed by government, and David Cameron even appoints him as an advisor.
Philip Green is one of those people that you never forget the first time you meet him, because this incredible sort of infectious enthusiasm that you just saw, this was someone who had an incredible passion for his business.
Then for his 60th, he's still doing it. He's flying everyone to Mexico, and there's Leonardo DiCaprio and Naomi Campbell on the beach. Stevie Wonder performed at the party, apparently.
In 2000, he acquired British Home Stores, which is a bit of a stalwart of the British high street.
Where can you get all this and more? BHS everywhere.
So he bought the business for £200 million. And within a couple of years, he had cut costs. Profits went up. The Greens family had paid themselves hundreds of millions of pounds worth of dividends. I guess things started to change by the time we got to the credit crunch in 2007-08. And that's when the pension went from having, you know, enough funds in it to having a deficit. So Philip Green had started to try and sell BHS around that time in 2007, but it wasn't until 2015 that he managed to find a buyer in Dominic Chappelle, a former bankrupt who bought it for a pound, and the company went bust about a year later.
Sir Philip Green, the multi-billionaire owner of Topshop, who seemed to have it all, now battling to save his reputation and knighthood following the collapse in April of BHS. The famous high street name he bought for £200 million in 2000 and sold for a quid.
I mean, he left that business very broken, but what did he walk away with?
Just before the business went bust, I did this investigation into how much money the Green family had taken out, and I got to about £580 million. So, interestingly, it's around the same amount as the pension deficit.
So let me check this. The Green family had taken out around £580 million, which was about the same amount as was missing from the pension fund, money which belonged to the BHS employees.
You know, there was a parliamentary inquiry and there was enormous public pressure on Philip to put money into the pension fund.
I'm going to call the police if you don't go.
Sir Philip, people want to know
why you're on holiday when they think that you're supposed to be sorting out the pension deficit.
Will you go away?
Why won't you talk to
will
people?
Will you go away?
I will go away. You can squirt with me water.
Go away.
The MP threatened to take his knighthood away from him, which was pretty important to him. I think it was about a year later, he put in £363 million into the pension fund.
And he did then make a public apology in a joint committee hearing.
There's certainly no intent at all on my part for anything to be like this, and it didn't need to be like this. And I just want to apologise to all the BHS people who've been involved in this.
What was he like as a boss?
He would ring his staff at all hours of the day, shouting down the phone at them, get people to stand up in front of meetings with their peers or their own staff, humiliate people.
The Guardian understands that there are at least 7 cases in which former members of staff have received substantial payouts to settle complaints of sexual harassment, bullying or racist abuse against Green.
Someone intimately involved in the case of a powerful businessman using non-disclosure agreements and substantial payments to conceal the truth about serious and repeated sexual harassment, racist abuse and bullying, which is compulsively continuing.
In October 2018, the former cabinet minister Peter Hain used the legal protection of the House of Lords to publicly name Philip Green as the businessman behind these allegations.
I feel it's my duty under parliamentary privilege to name Philip Green as the individual in question, given that the media have been subject to an injunction preventing publication of the full details of a story which is clearly in the public interest.
The Guardian's Owen Jones has been reporting on Philip Green, and he's been in touch with many former employees who've told him what it was like to work for him. So Philip Green has always claimed that his behaviour was merely banter. You've spoken to former and current employees, none of whom have signed NDAs, and heard his defence. Does banter seem like a fair assessment?
No, to be pithy. And indeed, when I put that to one of the people who came forward, they said banter suggests some kind of exchange or jocular language, but it isn't. It's one way, it's intense. You have to keep your mouth shut. What we're talking about here is an abuse of power.
So what happened? How did you come to report on Philip Green?
Originally, bizarrely, there's this function on Twitter where you can leave your direct messages open. And I just did, because some journalists do, because people get in touch. So I thought I'd give it a go. And I'm not joking. Within about 3 hours, somebody got in touch who used to work for Sir Philip Green and has since left. They came forward, and then I did a shout out on social media for anybody else who was willing to come forward who'd worked for Sir Philip Green, and several came forward. So it was obviously something people, to be honest, really, really wanted to talk about.
What sort of things were they telling you?
Repeatedly, allegedly slapping the bottoms of women who work for him. He would go in meetings and say, are you naughty girls? Do you need your bottoms slapped? Long and lingering hugs, creeping up in behind women in corridors and then making them jump by yelling boo and then caressing their shoulders to reassure them. He'd call women sweetheart, darling, love. When one woman objected to that, he told her to shut the F up. One example, a woman from an Indian background who he'd mocked for being overweight, saying has she had too many samosas. One time there was this presentation of lots of male models, and he just angrily ripped them down, allegedly yelling, "I don't want this gay shit." And just everyone expecting to grin and bear this sort of treatment. What it was put to me is, this wasn't banter, it was a climate of fear. So all of the people who came forward wanted to kind of encourage other people to have the confidence and to come forward and to open up a national conversation.
Do you get a sense then from reporting this of what sort of a person Philip Green is?
Well, the image that the allegations portray is someone who, is a bully on a colossal scale.
Around the time the allegations emerged last autumn, Philip Green moved to Monaco and he hasn't come back to the UK since. I think that speaks for itself in terms of his plans for the company and his involvement in it.
Today, the future of his business will be decided. A Against a backdrop of a rise in cheap online fashion companies like ASOS and Boohoo, the Arcadia Group has struggled, like many shops on the high street. And now its creditors need to decide if Green's plan to restructure it is enough to save the group from insolvency.
A few months ago, it was confirmed that he'd hired advisors to try and do a proper restructure of the business. That was kind of marked a line that he had had enough. His hopes of kind of producing a turnaround are probably gone. He just wants to batten it down as well as he can before he just can go off and enjoy life on his yacht and forget about it.
And one of the questions now is whether this former king of the high street can ever recover from this.
No, I mean, I think this, in terms of the reputation of Sir Philip Green, I think it's rightly in tatters. But I suppose the fear that I always have, to be slightly cynical, is the establishment tend to look after their own and, you know, very powerful people who allege to do terrible things are likely still to live the rest of their lives in wealth and comfort and affluence. And that's a sad reality of the order in which we currently live.
Thanks very much, Owen.
No worries.
Philip Green has always categorically and wholly denied being guilty of unlawful, sexual or racist behaviour. You can follow more on this story at theguardian.com. Coming up, the Mayor of London tells us why Trump shouldn't have been received on a state visit. Now, on Sunday, the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, wrote a comment piece for The Observer, saying that it was un-British to receive Trump on a state visit and compared him to dictators and fascists. And then on Monday, Trump arrived. And as he landed, he tweeted a response to Khan, saying he'd been foolishly nasty and was a stone-cold loser. He also added something about him or the mayor of New York being short. It was hard to tell who or what he meant. And then, yesterday in a press conference, Trump added...
You said, yes. Well, I think he's been a not very good mayor, from what I understand. He's done a poor job. Crime is up. A lot of problems. And I don't think he should be criticizing a representative of the United States that can do so much good for the United Kingdom.
Here's Sadiq Khan on what he makes of all this.
It was just a bit odd. You know, I'm 48 years old. And I think the last time I heard that sort of name calling, I was 11. It's a bit odd behaviour from an adult. I mean, put aside this an adult who is the leader of a country. Put aside that country's the USA. Look, it's for him to decide how he makes use of Twitter and what he wants to call me. All I'd say is this. If he can get this rattled by the mayor of London, heaven help us if North Korea says things that upset him. It's for him to explain, you know, what beef he has with me. Maybe he doesn't like short people. I don't know. I'm really happy to debate anybody who has views that are different to me. I don't believe in working in an echo chamber. The point I try to get across this Sunday was when you see some of the things that he's said and done, from banning people coming to his country because of their faith, separating children from their parents, defending white supremacists, neo-Nazis and anti-Semites, amplifying the tweets of racists from this country. When you see his former campaign manager doing the lecture circuit with far-right groups, but when you see the far-right playbook being used, picking on minority communities, stoking up fear, picking on immigrants. I mean, I can't stay silent. And I think it's really important for people in positions of power and influence to say it as it is. The contact that Donald Trump and I have had go back to him running for president when he said that he wanted to ban all Muslims from entering into the USA. But he'd make an exception for me because I was the mayor of London. And I, in a polite, courteous manner, pointed out there's nothing exceptional about me. And he was inadvertently or advertently playing into the hands of those who think that Islam, being a Muslim, is incompatible with being a Westerner. Since then, he's, you know, decided to say various things about me and to resort to name-calling. When Theresa May first went to America and invited Donald Trump for a state visit, I said then that it was too soon. Let's remind ourselves, Theresa May jumped on a plane, went to be the first person to meet Donald Trump to shore up her support in the Tory party. I just think it's premature, not just because he'd only been president for like a week, but when you add into the mix the fact this is a president whose views we disagree with on so many things, it is odd because it gives the impression we condone all the things he's said and done. It's unbecoming of us to have to be sycophants to a best friend. I can understand why Jeremy Corbyn boycotted the state banquet. It's because I suspect Jeremy Corbyn thinks the state banquet is wrong for this president at this stage. Maybe in the future it's something that he would be worthy of. I think it's also the situation that some of the things that he has said and done in the recent past and are things that the Labour Party disagrees with. But also I think it's the realisation that the expectations on our closest ally are far higher than they are on countries like China. So for those saying that Jeremy Corbyn was wrong to go to that state banquet and not this one, what I'd say in a respectful manner is our expectations on China are different to our expectations on the USA. But in both situations, we shouldn't be afraid of saying where we disagree with each other. We should have a working relationship with the USA. That means, by the way, of course, working together on big issues that matter to both of our countries and matters to our planet, but also calling each other out when we think they're wrong. That's what mature friends do. That's what mature countries do who are the closest allies. President Trump talks about protecting and preserving America's interest first. And of course, we should also think about the realities that, you know, this is a country with whom we have a special relationship. That will carry on, by the way, and endure even after Theresa May's gone and even after Donald Trump's gone. I think he should be here this week to commemorate the D-Day landings. It's really important for us to commemorate what happened 75 years ago, not just on the Western Front, on the Eastern Front as well. It's really important. Huge sacrifices made. No need for a state visit, though. No need for the state banquet. No need for all the baubles and the monies that have been spent on a state visit.
That's all for today. My thanks to Sarah Butler, Owen Jones, Rupert Neat and Sadiq Khan. Before we go, we were really pleased to hear the news that the police have dropped their investigation into the journalists Trevor Burney and Barry McCaffrey for their work on the murders of six Catholics in Loughlin Island, which is in Northern Ireland, in 1994. We covered their story in our episode Investigating the Loughlin Island Murders on March the 21st. You can find it online. Today's programme was produced by Mithili Rao, Lucy Greenwell and Chika Ayres. The sound design is by Axel Kakutier and the executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.